I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fog and dying to be. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the fog and dying key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program. Here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com or OffWhiteTV.com, you can reach us through either channel. More news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Here's an interesting report from Andy Ngo, and that's N-G-O. He's a Vietnamese-American who's done a lot of reporting on Antifa. He's been beaten up by Antifa several times. They're not very nice people, are they? And this is his report is, black studies professor at Washington University admits to pretending to be black, like Rachel Dolezal, Jessica Krug, said she was black to advance her professional and academic career. And this is, this is an inevitable result of the racist affirmative action programs where people get special perks. They're hired because they're black or they are, get a scholarship because they're black. Departments have certain quotas, and they want certain people in there. Usually it's black. Sometimes it's women or some other privileged group, and that's what causes people to especially if you're not very proud, go to the next step. Well, wait a sec. Okay, yeah, if I can get this job because by claiming to be black or native Indian or whatever, why not? Now, it may not be very honorable, but that is the rotten environment in which we are now unfortunately having to play. And the delightful thing is that some of these categories are not exactly obvious. Now, I'm going to get into this story in just a minute, but in Canada, of course, special privilege attaches to being a Native Indian. Yeah, that's right. You get, I know they're an oppressed minority, but I mean, we're living in insane times. Insane. That's the only word for it. The only word that makes any sense. Anyway, we live in these insane times, and so we're if you get special privilege for being or consideration for being a native, well, why not claim to be native? And that's kind of a good question, because what exactly is a native? I mean, how much native blood do you have running through your veins to be a native? That's a good question. And on some applications, I've actually seen, do you identify as? Oh, no, what does that mean? I identify as something. I woke up this morning and I just thought, I kind of feel like a Native Indian today. So, okay, I'm an Indian today. Tomorrow I may wake up and feel something else. I mean, we live in a world of galloping, absolutely galloping, bouncing off the wall absurdity. Anyway, Jessica Krug. Now, I would say, as a picture of her, at a glance, she's probably looks Hispanic, but she might not be. Well, okay, let's see what this is all about. She's a George Washington University professor who says she lied about being black. A U.S. academic whose work focuses on Africa and the African diaspora, that's blacks around the world, has said she lied about being black. Jessica Krug, an associate professor at George Washington University, admitted that she was, in fact, a white Jewish woman from Kansas City. You know, these antics should be laughed at. I've built my life on a violent anti-black lie, a blog post written under Ms. Klug's name read. I built my lie on a violent anti-black lie. The university said it was investigating the blog post but would not comment further. Ms. Krug's case, which has drawn surprise and condemnation from those who know her, bears strong parallels to Rachel Dolezal, a white race activist who claimed to be black. Like, she was, I think she was the leader of the NAACP, that's the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, chapter in Spokane a few years ago. She identified as black, even though I think at one point she was blonde, but I guess you can change your hair color and so on. But Ms. Krug's case, Ms. Dolezal first made headlines in 2015 when her parents outed her as white. The former civil rights activist and African studies instructor has kept up the pretense of being African American black for years. But she said she identified as black. Yeah, I really hate myself. I'm Jewish, but I think I'm black. I mean, these people are really screwed up. Writing in a Medium post published on Thursday, Jessica Krug said that she had falsely assumed identities, though I had no right to claim. At first, North African blackness, than U.S.-rooted blackness, than Caribbean-rooted Bronx blackness. You know, if we didn't have this insane identity politics, if people had to qualify on the basis of their skills and knowledge, rather than gaining special privilege, we wouldn't have this. To an escalating degree over my adult life, I have eschewed my lived experience as a white Jewish child. Well, there we might get into a bit of an argument as to whether being Jewish is white, but okay. White Jewish child. She described this behavior as the very epitome of violence, of thievery, and appropriation of the myriad ways in which non-black people continue to use and abuse black identities and cultures, adding that she continued the pretense even in her personal relationships. It's not violence. It is, I would agree with her, it's thievery. Conning. And just plain disgusting dishonesty. She's still spouting cultural Marxist ideology. The myriad ways in which non-black people continue to use and abuse black identities. I think most whites do not particularly want to participate in or appropriate black culture. In contrast to what is being pushed at us by the cultural Marxist anti-white media, blacks do not have an awful lot to offer that's attractive in their culture. Now, you know, everybody's entitled to their culture, don't get me wrong. I just don't find much, go as far as to say anything that I know about black culture that I would find appealing. I don't like their music. I don't like what I know of black food, either from the Caribbean or from North America. I don't like, you know, what's often considered black music. I don't like jazz, although I know jazz is not entirely black. There's little about black culture I want to, as they say, appropriate. It's not as though it's something prestige, much as that's pushed on us. You usually try to appropriate. You want to participate in something that you look up to. And I was talking to a colleague earlier tonight about that. We generally, at least a healthy society, looks up to, even maybe wants to copy, something better than itself, something you look up to. She blamed her lies on mental health issues and trauma experienced in her early years, although she said this was not an excuse for her actions. Darn right it's not. So she has mental health issues. Well, if she's got mental health issues, should she really be a, what is she here? Professor. Yeah, she is, we are told, an associate professor at George Washington University. She's got mental health issues. Get yourself to a nut house, lady. Her academic work, including the 2018 book Fugitive Modernities, Kisama and the Politics of Freedom, focuses on the politics and culture of African and African diaspora societies. According to media reports, Ms. Klug also used the name of Jessica La Bombalera as an activist. So she's as David Icke says in his very, very perceptive commentaries, she's a shape changer. Con man, of course, but she's a shape changer. In one video posted earlier this year, she berated white New Yorkers for failing to yield their time for black and brown indigenous New Yorkers. George Washington University, where Ms. Krug teaches courses in African, Caribbean, and diaspora history, says it's aware of Ms. Krug's media post and is looking into the situation, they should fire her. This Krug's confession has been met with astonishment and anger, with fellow academics, students, and friends making their feelings known online and in interviews. Ms. Krug's post did not give a reason for a decision to admit her deception, nor its timing. However, screenwriter Hari Zayed said her admission came because she had been found out. Jess Krug is someone I called a friend up until this morning when she gave me a call admitting to everything written there. She didn't do it out of benevolence, he wrote on Twitter. She claimed to be black because it gave her certain advantages, although she already had advantages being Jewish. But I think, at least even according to her own admission, it may only be an alibi, but she's mentally ill. And yet these are the people universities expose their students to. Wow. Black Latino scholars have recently started to confront Ms. Krug and ask questions about her background. According to Yomera Figueroa, an associate professor of diaspora studies at Michigan State University, quote, there was no witch hunt, but there was a need to draw the line, she wrote in a Twitter thread. Krug got ahead of the story because she was caught. Yarimar Borria, professor of anthropology and Puerto Rican studies at Hunter College, wrote on Twitter that she'd been fooled by Ms. Krug, but always suspected something was off with her. Well, yeah, look at her face. I mean, she's got a nose on her that's very typically Jewish, and anyway, she certainly doesn't particularly look black. But that's the problem when you can appropriate when you can identify as, which means, well, I kind of think today I am Jewish. Or I'm black in this case. In that sense, she did gaslight us, Ms. Bonilla wrote, not only into thinking she was a WOC, that's woman of color, but also into thinking we were somehow both politically and intellectually inferior. A student at GW, 21-year-old Aria Sacona, said she was shocked and perplexed by the academic admission. She said she was due to start Ms. Krug's class on Latin American history on Monday. It just breaks my heart that these students came in very bright-eyed and eager to learn about Latin heritage and the history, Ms. Sacona told the Washington Post. We all placed a lot of trust in her. what can you say? Just gets better. It's the gift that just keeps on giving. a lot of this is the nonsense of cultural Marxism and race ideology coming home to bite them. And a lot of this is just plain inevitable. There was a report out over the media about four people shot dead in Oshawa. Oshawa is a city about 30 miles east of Toronto, a big motor city. Interesting. The person who passed it on to me said, Mogadishu North. Now, I don't know if that person knows something I don't know, but a question I would have is, what were the names? And why does it always take us so long to get the names of victims? So four people were shot dead in a house. We don't know their names. But more interesting, or at least equally interesting, would be to know their race. Who are these people? Well, they probably don't want to tell us. Well, okay, it may be too early to demand this information, but I will say I would like to know it in due course. What is their race? But what is the race of the suspected killer or killers? I'll tell you. That this is a prediction. I don't think I'll be proven wrong. The race of the victims almost certainly is black, and the perpetrator almost certainly is black. That's just the way it is with these people. We have violent black gangs, violent black crime. And the gang violence that we hear so much about in Toronto, and very often, or most of the time, we're not advised further that these gangs are black. And that's kind of important information. It's not really a gang problem, because that's kind of generic. A gang is really any grouping of people who are up to criminal activity. It's a grouping. Grouping are probably more than two that are up to criminal activity. But that could be anything. It could be 5 people or 10 people grouped geographically. They just happen to come from the same neck of the woods. Well, that's not what's going on in Toronto. It's not that type of gang violence. It's blacks, basically. Blacks and Somalis. But blacks and Somalis, if you want to make a distinction. And there is a slight racial distinction. That is the overwhelming reality about so-called gang violence in Toronto. Well, here's another story. I got it over the radio, but the other night. Now it's in black and white. So here it goes. Bystanders among 6 injured in shooting. Some of the 6 people injured in a brazen shooting outside a Toronto bakery were innocent bystanders seeking shelter from a heavy rainfall, city police said Wednesday as they appealed for witnesses to come forward. Toronto Police Superintendent Sean Nareen said that while preliminary evidence suggests that the early morning attack may have had a target in mind, the bulk of those caught up in the shooting were nothing more than victims of circumstance. Nareen said that held true both for most of the 5 men and 1 woman injured in the incident, as well as at the 24-hour bakery where the violence erupted. Now, this is an odd thing, a 24-hour day bakery. It was on Eglinton Avenue West near Oakwood, which is in the area that's called Little Jamaica in Toronto. 2 a.m. in the morning. Anyway, there was a sudden deluge. I believe this was Tuesday night. I think so. No, Wednesday night. Anyway, there was a sudden deluge, and these people sheltered in the doorway out to keep out the rain. You've got 6 people huddling together out of the rain. The vehicle drives by, opens up on the crowd that's standing there, obviously searching for their intended targets. Police first learned of the shooting at around 2 a.m. Wednesday morning, when they received reports of gunshots outside Spence's Bakery, a mainstay at the Midtown community often dubbed Little Jamaica. One of the few times, actually, and this is in the National Post, that we were even privileged to know the race of the people. I mean, unless it's to the advantage of somebody claiming persecution. Excuse me. Uh,
Noreen said that the early evidence suggests a black SUV with numerous occupants inside was driving eastbound along Eglinton Avenue before it must have seen somebody in that grouping of six people. I'm sorry, maybe more of them. There are six people who were shot, all of whom actually are now out of the hospital. And I'll come back to that in a moment. And then it made a U-turn and circled back to the bakery. Noreen alleges that an unknown number of shooters then opened fire, striking the six victims. He said they ranged in age from 30 to 69. They're all actually out of hospital now. He said police have not yet determined who may have been the target of the shooting, but said innocent bystanders were undoubtedly caught up in the melee. He said the business itself was the victim of an incident. The apparently was gang related. And he goes on to say, we are seeing the brazen disregard for public safety, the safety of the citizens of Toronto. Well, this is not the first time recently where some black gunman or gunmen saw somebody that they dislike for whatever reason and opened up on that person, even though that person was in a crowd. So it would appear that of the six people shot, one, maybe one, but that, even that's not certain because there are other people there who were not hit. Only one was a target for some reason. The others were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. This is typical of the utter disregard for human life demonstrated by blacks. They see one person that they want to hit, bang, 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 from several shooters, and six people go down. Fortunately, none of them killed, but with utter disregard for human life. Now, I come back to that. The slogan: it's a group. It's a Marxist, white-hating group funded by George Soros. That's Black Lives Matter. But I think we must constantly challenge them on their name. Black Lives Matter. Well, then, why are you demonstrating on cities, in major cities, destroying white statues and white monuments? Your name suggests Black Lives Matter. All right, that is the name. Okay, fair enough. Well, I can agree with that. Black Lives Matter. All lives matter. I know you're not supposed to say that, but all lives, oh, yes, okay. All lives matter. Black lives matter. But why are you protesting about that? Well, what are you protesting about? Black lives matter? Fine. Go and tell it to the people that are hurting black lives. It wasn't some, almost certainly, we don't know yet for sure, but almost certainly that was not some white guy driving the, or a vanload of white people driving down the road decided to shoot up a group of blacks huddled in the doorway of this bakery at 2 a.m. in the morning. No. So why aren't you protesting in the black community? Why aren't you preaching to other blacks? Black Lives Matter. Stop shooting each other. Stop killing each other. Stop showing so little regard for black lives that because you want to take out one person in a crowd who's black, yeah, you just shoot at the whole crowd. Doesn't matter. Black lives matter, yeah. But that message shouldn't be sent to us. I note that although in the clunky language of the report, multiple, they mean many, but multiple shots were fired. and the shooters managed to hit six people. They didn't manage to develop to
didn't manage to kill any of them. Well, you might ask, well, why do you laugh? I mean, at relatively close range with a handgun, that's pretty bad marksmanship. But have you seen the way many of these black gangsters like to shoot? They instead of holding the handgun upright, they hold it sideways. Now, if you've ever fired a gun or a handgun, you know that it has something called a kick. I mean, so it jerks, if you hold it properly, it jerks back upwards a little bit after each round is fired. So if you're going to be anywhere near accurate, you've got to hold it that way. And then on the next shot, re-aim. If you're firing rapidly with the gun on its turned on its side, what happens is the it will kick. If you're right-handed, it's going to kick moving to the left, which means that your next shot is probably going to be way wide of the mark. So maybe the first shot is more or less in the direction of the guy you want to hit, but you miss. And then what happens is the next shot goes way wide. Now, of course, shooting at a crowd, it goes way wide, but you may have ended up hitting some completely innocent person. And that's exactly what's happening. Interesting news. There was a Trump supporter who was killed over the weekend, shot and killed, in Portland. And it appears that the police have now made an arrest. In fact, he's killed. Suspect in fatal Portland shooting reported killed as officers move in. A man being investigated for the fatal shooting of a right-wing activist who was part of a pro-Trump caravan in Portland, Oregon, was killed Thursday night when authorities moved to arrest him, according to three law enforcement officers familiar with the investigation. The official said the suspect, Michael Forrest Reinhold, 48, was killed during an encounter in Lacey, Washington, southwest of Seattle, when a federal fugitive task force moved to apprehend him. And isn't it interesting how completely lame and discouraged and dispirited the local law enforcement is that it required the federal task force to finally make this apprehension. An arrest warrant had been issued by the Portland police earlier Thursday, on the same day that Vice News published an interview with Reinhold, in which he appeared to admit to the shooting, saying, "I had no choice." The Portland police had been investigating Saturday's shooting death of Aaron Danielson, one of the supporters of President Donald Trump, who came into Portland, downtown Portland, and clashed with protesters demonstrating against racial injustice and police brutality. I mean, they've been rioting in Portland for over 3 months. Reynolds had been a persistent presence at the demonstrations in Portland over recent weeks, helping the protesters with security and suggesting on social media that the struggle was becoming a war where there will be casualties. In other words, basically promising violence. "I'm 100% Antifa all the way," he posted on Instagram in June, referring to a loose collection of activists who have mobilized to oppose groups they see as fascist or racist. Now that is, well, this is from the Seattle, it's the Seattle Times. Well, now that is a real whitewash of reality. But let's have that again. Antifa is a loose collection of activists who mobilize to oppose groups they see as fascist or racist. No, they are a communist, anarchist, violent group of cowards who normally go around masked because, well, they're up to no good. Violent. They have interfered with free speech. They've attacked many people across Canada and the United States. In the name of, I suppose, opposing racism and fascism, whatever that is. Yeah, do you know any fascists? I mean, do you know anybody who identifies themselves as a fascist? Hey, I'm a fascist and proud of it. Well, it's really another place, another time. I frankly don't know anybody, at least in North America, who does. No, it's basically a group that attacks anybody of conservative religious views or traditional racial views. Anyway, back to Reinhold. I'm willing to fight for my brothers and sisters, even if some of them are too ignorant to realize what Antifa truly stands for. We do not want violence, but we will not run from it either. Well, he's lying. They perpetrate violence. In the Vice interview, Reinhold said he acted in self-defense, believed that he was in a friend were about to be stabbed. I could have sat there and watched them kill a friend of mine of color, but I wasn't going to do that. On July 5th, during the protests, Reinhold was charged with resisting arrest and possession of a loaded firearm, but the case was later dropped. Resisting arrest and possession of a loaded firearm? Why would they drop the case? I mean, as President Trump has repeatedly said, the leftist liberal policies of these Democratic-controlled cities that have led to the just escalating violence. At the end of July, he showed a bloodied arm to a journalist with Bloomberg Quick Take News and said he'd been shot while intervening in a fight. Reese Monson, a leader of the local protest movement who also helps organize security, said all the people who helped with security in Portland, including Reinhold, were trained on de-escalation. Yeah, he was excellent at that. Oh, really? Monson said the security designees have been trained to approach potential agitators and politely ask them to leave. They've also been trained on how to conduct physical removals, but are cautioned to try to avoid such measures because they can cause things to escalate. I think that is mostly being pumped out there for press consumption. The night of the shooting began with a large crowd of Trump supporters gathering in the suburbs. They planned to drive hundreds of vehicles carrying flags down the highways of Portland, but many of them actually drove downtown, where protesters had been congregating regularly. Once there, some Trump supporters shot paintballs into the crowd, while people on the street threw objects back at them. Some fistfights broke out. As evening turned into night, video appears to show Danielson, who was wearing a hat with the insignia of Patriot Prayer, and Reinhold on a street along with a few other people. One person was shouting, "We've got a couple right there." The man who captured video of the shooting, Justin Dunlap, said it appeared that Danielson reached to his hip. He pulled from his side. Reinhold apparently shot him. And this Reinhold is apparently dead. Probably resisting arrest. The gift that just keeps on giving is called We. That's this charity by these two hustlers, Craig and Mark Kielberger. They were supposed to be given a sweetheart deal to administer for over $50 million a federal program to pay, get this, young people, student volunteers, students who would volunteer but would be paid, but paid below the minimum wage. Anyway, this all stemmed from the tight connections between the Trudeau and members of some members of his cabinet, including the woman in charge of such grants, the Minister for Diversity, Inclusion, and Youth, Bardish Jagger. Anyway, turns out there was very tight cooperation and contacts for her for months between her and Black Lives Matter. We were supposed to provide some documentation to the parliamentary committee, one of the parliamentaries looking into this, and they have now refused. So the more cover up. Well, I'm going to take my musical break right now. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. Let me play some tunes from a CD of some of the great queens of country and western music, and there have been so many: Loretta Lynn, Lynn Anderson, Laurie Morgan, Connie Smith. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
Well, I was born to call on his daughter in a cabin on a hill in Butcher Holler. We were poor, but we had love. That's the one thing that Daddy made sure of. He shoveled coal to make a poor man's dollar. All day long in the field of hoeing corn. Mommy rocked the baby that night and read the Bible by the coal light. And everything would start all over come break of morn. Daddy loved and raised their kids on a miner's pay. Mommy scrubbed our clothes on a washboard every day. Well, I've seen her fingers bleed to complain there was no need. She'd smile in Mommy's understanding way. In the summertime, we didn't have shoes to wear. But in the wintertime, we'd all get a brand new pair. From a mail order catalog, money made from selling a hog. Daddy always managed to get the money somewhere. Yeah, I'm proud to be a coal miner's daughter.
Forget you, for I thought then I never could.
your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden. I could sing you a tune and promise you the moon, but if that's what it takes to hold you, I'd just as soon let you go. But there's one thing I want you to know. You better look before you leap, still waters run deep, and there won't always be someone there to pull you out. And you know what I'm talking about. So smile for a while and let's be jolly. Life shouldn't be so melancholy. Come along and share the good times while we can. I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden.
A woman, giving all your love to just one man. You have bad times, and you have good times, doing things that you don't understand. If you love him, you forgive him. Even though he's hard to understand. And if you love him, oh, be proud of him. Cause after all, he's just a man.
Thank you. face, I love you. Funny face, I need you. My whole world's wrapped up in you. When the road I walk seems all uphill, and the colors in my rainbow turn blue, you kiss the tears away, you smile at me and say, funny face, funny face, I love you. Funny face, I love you. Funny face, I need you. These are the sweetest words I've ever heard. Funny face, don't leave me. Funny face, believe me. My whole world's wrapped up in you. Feelings as I sometimes do, and I say those mean things that we know are not true. You forgive my childish way, you hold me close and say, funny face,
funny face,
I love you. Funny face, I love you. Funny face, I need you. These are the sweetest words I've ever heard. Funny face, don't leave me. Funny face, believe me. My whole world's wrapped up.
That's Donna Fargo. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, entwine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace peace forever be our lot, and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our Queen and heaven bless.